Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining Snappy Comebacks for But You Look So Good conference call. Ms. Alicia Barron, you may now begin.
Great. Thank you so much, Claire. And thank you so much, everyone, for joining us tonight. I'm really excited about tonight's call because the genesis of this call started actually with a meeting that I attended of my MS After Hours group here in Houston, which is a young persons with MS group. And I got into a really great discussion with several ladies that attend that meeting about times that they got really frustrated that people were making kind of some insensitive questions or comments about their invisible symptoms. And so I thought, you know, that'd be a really great phone call to have with people. So I want to thank the ladies of that group for helping me start this call because I thought it was a really great idea. So thanks to those ladies. I know that you're on the call. And I want to just present tonight a little slide here about our presenters. We're going to start out with Caitlin Anderson. Caitlin Anderson, as you can see, has her PhD in higher education, and she's worked for several academic campuses. And really, I mean, building on that experience, she now works to enhance relationships and solve problems. She works behind the scenes to achieve success in conferences and event planning, book editing, and coordinating special projects. She's a certified life coach, and her clients have included individuals working on dissertations, business people, writers, and women in transition, among other people. She's now a founder of her own consulting company in Albuquerque, New Mexico, beautiful Albuquerque. Caitlin is coaching for a cause to raise money for the National MS Society. We appreciate that. And designs workshops and retreats and coaches those who are newly diagnosed with MS. And she is living with multiple sclerosis since 2006. So we're excited to have Caitlin join us. And we also are joined by Michelle Close. And Michelle Close, as you can see, is quite credentialed, and she is a certified employee assistance professional, a licensed professional counselor, and also for an associate certified career coach, I apologize. And she's provided management consultation for Fortune 500 companies such as AT&T, Southwest, USAA, and Dell Computers on issues such as conflict resolution, communication skills, risk management, and crisis response services for 10 years. She was inspired to provide career coaching services after going through her own difficult experience of requesting a job accommodation. After completing a certification in executive coaching at the University of Texas in Dallas and being credentialed by the International Coaching Federation, she decided to turn her skill into a volunteer opportunity through the National MS Society. And she's partnered with our Planning Wise program to offer career coaching for individuals impacted by MS. Michelle coaches individuals living with MS to help them reach their career potential, whether it be transitioning to a new career better suited for unique skill sets and challenges associated with MS, identifying a stress management plan, or creating a work-life balance that addresses issues related to MS. And she really appreciates the sense of accomplishment she gets when she's working with our clients and the opportunity she has to educate businesses about MS. So I want to thank you, ladies, so much for joining us, and I'm excited for us to be providing this call. So we're going to start out with Caitlin Anderson.
Thank you, Alicia, and welcome everyone to this call. It's about 85 or 90 degrees here in Albuquerque, and I'm thrilled that I don't live in Vermont anymore, where I hear they got snow this week. But you look so good. How many times have we all heard that comment? Let's just take a minute and get settled in and welcome everyone to the call. And take a minute, deep breath. Think about this comment, but you look so good. How many times have you heard this? And I've only been diagnosed less than 6 years. What's your answer? It might depend on your mood. It might depend on the situation you're in. Are you at work? Are you at home? Church? Is it just a stranger in the grocery store line? How many times have we said to people we know, if I had a dollar for every time I've heard, but you look so good. If I'm feeling sassy, I really just want to see my MRI, and I wonder if I should get one laminated and keep it in my pocket. Because that, when we're living with this invisible disease, most of the time, a lot of the time, we do look good. Even and especially when we're in our scooters, we have braces on, we're using our walkers. Did you come tonight expecting the official answer? I don't think there really is one. And sometimes it depends how we're welcomed into the disease, how we're welcomed into the community. And I do admit that I had a very gentle welcome, and very early on a friend of mine said to me, "Caitlin, you know, a girl can never have too many scooters." And so I was encouraged very early on to get assisted devices that helped me live my life more fully with my kid, in my community, at the zoo. And I think that then makes me a spokesperson or someone who's willing to be out there. Even if I don't feel good, I'm willing to try to engage. I think one of the most important things to think about when we hear, "but you look so good," is instead of necessarily having one of those snappy comebacks, stop and think, what do you think is the speaker's or your friend, your parent, what do you think is really their underlying message? Because I really have to believe they're not trying to be mean. And they're really, nobody's trying to hurt us. Sometimes I think the message behind that comment might be, "I've really never heard of MS. And you look so good. Help me understand." Sometimes I think people, especially kids, are scared. Will I die? But I look good. What other kinds of messages do you think might come from people saying, "but you look so good"? Another thing I think is really important to think about is the intention. Is the person trying to be helpful, loving, encouraging? It might even be just someone in a grocery line, and it's just trying to be a social comment. I have to tell you, a neurologist told a friend of mine who's living with a son with many challenges, if she really doesn't feel like talking to someone, just tell them, "you know what, the neurologists are so dumb, they're so stupid, they don't even know what's wrong with them," if she really wants to get people off her back. But I think that your response and how you answer the question, "but you look so good," is really about disclosure, isn't it? That's one of the words that's really tough, and I'm so glad Michelle's with us tonight to talk about how and when to make decisions about disclosure in the work setting. But just as critical is to think about how we come to be comfortable with disclosing at different levels. Do you remember what our English teachers told us in high school? The 5 W's and the H? Who and how do you let know what about MS? And when? Where are you when you tell them? And why? What's the intention behind the message or the purpose that you're going to have in choosing what to disclose? And I think if we could have the next slide, Alicia. Thank you. What I'd like to focus on tonight quickly is just thinking about the personal relationship side of disclosure and answering the question, "but you look so good." And again, this was the thing that I think helped me most through my early diagnosis. I was diagnosed in 2006, and Bessie, who was a secretary that worked for me at the time, shared this. "So, Caitlin, you're inside a circle of roses. That if you think of a circle of roses, they're going to provide you with protection. And they're beautiful. Just you can close your eyes for a minute. The roses are starting to come out here in New Mexico. And if you're enclosed in a circle of roses, think how wonderful the smell's going to be. And those thorns are there to keep people out." I think what's most important to think about with this image or metaphor of the circle of roses is that you decide who to let in or who to kick out of that circle. As a coach, one of the things that's been most important to me is to think about wellness. And I'm on the region wellness programming committee or something, and I participate in MS yoga and MS aqua aerobics here in New Mexico. And for me, the wellness model includes physical, occupational, emotional, social, intellectual, and spiritual aspects of our whole being. So it really is looking at you as a whole person. And I think those components fit with these concentric circles. So if you have a pen or paper with you, or if you had a chance to print the slides, if you don't have the slides, take a piece of paper and write your name in the middle, and draw some roses and concentric circles outside that circle. So remember, you're in the middle, and you get to choose who can come inside and protect you from the outside until you're ready to disclose to an outer circle. I think as your comfort grows with saying the word multiple sclerosis, saying, I'm living with multiple sclerosis, I'm doing the best I can with this chronic illness. So as your comfort grows with saying that, you might choose to expand the circle and to go to the next concentric circle, which I think would be your family and close friends. They may, some of them are inside the circle, some might not be. And this was really helpful for me to draw and figure out, who do I let know what and when? And as your comfort grows, the circle grows. I know many of us have questions about how to answer the question, but you look so good, especially to our children. I'm a mom. My daughter was 5 when I was diagnosed, and we had to make a decision about when and how to disclose about my illness to her. And I think for those of you that are also parents, you've made that same decision to disclose or not to disclose when, how, where, and why. The MS Society has information such as, I think it's called Smilin, a publication focused for kids. There are books you can find. Again, there's no right or wrong answer. One of my friends had probably waited 5 or 6 years before she disclosed to her daughter. But her daughter said, Mom, do all mommies have to take shots every day? And that's when she realized it was an important time. We told our daughter right away, and I think she's grown with me and grown up in our understanding of MS. So that's, we start with the inside, and that's really dealing with our emotions. Maybe that's the time, the people you can cry with, sort of you're learning what the physical challenges are. And that next circle, I would call my spiritual community, that next level of family and close friends. The next level out, I think, really is when the disclosure becomes more of a social issue or a social question. You might start thinking about expanding your disclosure to a larger community. That might be the social niceties, might see people in a grocery store. You might start getting involved with activities in the MS Society in your region, or you might decide to start speaking out, joining activities or clubs, or doing some fundraising, such as the MS Walk we had just last weekend with 1,000 people walking on a beautiful day. Or you might choose to participate or volunteer in the MS Bike Ride or other, which I think just happened, the Houston to Austin or one of those big, huge bike rides that y'all have in Texas. And so I think there's that social level. And the final level, if not, I'm sure there's many more levels that go out, but the next one I think of is the occupational and intellectual part of wellness, which is when and how do you disclose and how do you respond to, but you look so good at work, to your coworkers, to the public, and really at a professional level. And then there's beyond the circle. I think that these changes of how you respond to that come as we develop an identity, I believe, of living with MS. As we become more comfortable with saying it ourselves, with considering how we're going to answer questions, what we might say, that's going to change. And once we step out of the circle of roses, it keeps going. Some of us might change through different phases of our MS or through a different fighting and exacerbation. I don't like that word, fighting, do I? Maybe moving through an exacerbation or having a new symptom jump up and challenge you. But we really develop our identity as a person living with MS. And quite often I find that I really answer a lot of those questions using humor. And I think that's become a really healing thing for me. And sometimes it's that sort of self-deprecating humor with a little bit of grace thrown in. But you'll have a way of figuring out, maybe using a circle like this with your own folks and people, and put specific names inside those circles as you move out. And I think, as I just said, the last final the circle that we talked about there is really deciding when and how to disclose and answer the question, but you look so good, at a work setting or with your coworkers as a professional and to the public. And I think that's a wonderful way that we have, very lucky to have with us tonight, Michelle Close, who can move to helping us think about but you look so good and employment. Michelle?
Thank you, Caitlin. I really appreciate it. And I have to say, as a coach, may I have your permission to borrow your circle exercise with my client?
Of course. Please do.
Thank you. You know, up until the time I sought a job accommodation, I really didn't think of MS impacting my career. I was, as Caitlin said, she entered MS gently. I did the same. I had a supportive work place that I didn't realize until I started the process of getting my own job accommodation that all individuals may not experience that. Because I hadn't, up until the time I asked for my job accommodation, didn't have any invasive or insensitive comments about my symptoms. And once I went through the process of asking for a job accommodation, I learned that those evasive comments do come quite frequently. And so I used the National MS Society to educate myself regarding disclosure, knowing my rights. And I wanted to do this so that I would have a plan in place to be able to control whether or not I disclosed about my MS in the workplace, and whether or not how I would disclose, and if that involved a job accommodation, how that would look. You know, the benefits of work are, there's a lot of benefits of work. Most importantly, much needed health benefits for MS, but also for self-esteem and empowerment and meaning and sometimes distraction from just having a life focused on MS, and also for financial reasons. So it's because of those benefits that, you know, I've decided I really want to help individuals continue in their careers after being diagnosed with MS. And my purpose here is to give you information so that you can make informed decisions about disclosing, and maybe have a snappy comeback when somebody says, but you look so good. You know, not being able to handle or trying to manage the individual symptoms of MS can be difficult in the workplace, but it is doable. Manage or having MS doesn't mean that you can't have a career. You know, the latest survey by the MS Society indicated that 40% of the people with MS are still employed after 20 years. And I've had MS for 21 years, and I consider myself very fortunate to still be part of that 40% population. And I do now take the time to educate my coworkers about MS. And if you're not employed or you do volunteer work, you can still have an opportunity to respond to individuals that have questions and help educate them about any misperceptions they might have about MS. It's one of the reasons that a lot of individuals leave the workplace is because of fatigue or cognitive reasons. And I wonder sometimes if those individuals leave because they don't know about the job accommodation process or using energy management to work around their individual symptoms, or access the use of a coach or a vocational counselor to reduce the cognitive and physical symptoms of at work. There's several common work challenges and I'm going to move quickly through them because I really want you to get a good overview of the disclosure process. Part of the challenge of having a hidden symptom is that it can create a sense of denial if you're newly diagnosed. And the problem with that denial is that you may hold back from asking for help and reaching out to a support system. Or if your symptoms are hidden, you might think, well, I really don't want to look like I'm getting preferential treatment, so I think I'll just pass. I won't talk about my MS. I won't talk about needing an accommodation because I'm embarrassed by it or I'm shamed by it. I'm a rather bold person at work, so I didn't have any problem with being embarrassed. I was just, this is what's best for me. And this is what I need to manage my MS because I'm dealing with this on a daily basis. So I guess one of the main things I would want you to know is when you walk away from this conference is that you don't need to disclose. There, you should not feel guilty about not telling if you choose not to. You are under no obligation to tell your employer. If your disability interferes with your ability to perform your job, then you may decide, okay, I want to ask for a job accommodation, so I'm going to tell them I need a job accommodation. Even if you tell them you need a job accommodation, you still don't need to tell them your diagnosis around that job accommodation. You only need to tell them what you need help with in terms of accommodating your work to be able to perform the job. But it can be very stressful being newly diagnosed, having symptoms that are interfering with your work like fatigue or cognitive problems, or even looking for a new job and not knowing, should I disclose about this? What will happen if I disclose? So there's not an easy answer. I tell individuals there's not an easy answer. I did read something, I think it was either in Miss Manners or Emily Post, but the gist of the question was, how do you answer politely to an individual who has asked a completely invasive question or one that overstepped boundaries? And I just loved the answer, because the answer was, if you forgive me for not answering your question, I'll forgive you for asking it. Again, if you forgive me for not answering your question, I'll forgive you for asking it. In other words, it's a polite way to say you crossed over a boundary and I don't want to talk about it. However, if you get to the point where you decide to disclose, because you would like to ask for a job accommodation or educate your coworkers, I suggest to my clients to consider the potential consequences of doing so. You know, make a pro versus con list. Access the information available at the MS Society, and I'll go over a list later, on resources to prepare for disclosure. And then practice with somebody that's supportive in your life. Know your rights. And as Caitlin referred to, you know, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. You know, who, in terms of asking for a job accommodation, who to tell would be only individuals that have the decision-making power to implement your job accommodation. So, in other words, if you have a frontline supervisor, but that individual really doesn't have any power to make decisions, well, then you would go to the person who does have the power to change your schedule, like in my case, like human resources. When, as I talked about, you know, you might want to tell somebody before an interview. You don't necessarily have to tell them you have MS before an interview, But you may want to disclose that you use a mobility aid and ask them if they have an elevator. Or, like I said, you may want to tell if you're having difficulty performing your job, because you don't want to have a situation where you're having problems performing your job and then that leads to a performance issue. And you don't want to get written up. So a lot of times people choose to disclose to their employer when they're having a job-related issue. And excuse me for that phone in the background. I'm so sorry. So if you have are having a job-related issue and you decide to tell your employer, as I said before, be prepared, know your rights, and practice before you go into your employer to tell them. As I believe it was Alicia mentioned before, the South Central region of the MS Society does have resources for career coaching, assistance with benefits, and issues regarding advocacy for legal assistance and education regarding MS and care management. And the program that I coach for is the Planning Wise program, and I'm so grateful to be a part of that program. If you want more information about the Planning Wise program, you can dial 1-800-344-4867 and press option 1. Now, if you don't have a piece of paper handy, don't worry about it. There is a resource list that will be given at the end of the presentation, and the number for the MS Society is on there as well. One of the main tools that I used when I was asking for my job accommodation was the Job Accommodation Network, and they have information that is specific to disclosing about MS. I also use the National MS Society's website. They have a series of videos on disclosing at work and how to decide if you want to disclose. And that was very helpful as well. So I encourage you to look at those resources. And if you do want to disclose, know what your rights are before you do disclose. And know that allow yourself permission of when you want to disclose. Know that it's very personal and your decision should be based on your needs, what you think are important, and the situation you're in, and whether or not disclosing would be helpful to you. If you do disclose, then you want to be direct and positive. And it helps if you're in the workplace to have a good work history for your employer to look at for after you disclose. You know, when I disclosed, I had been with my employer, I think, 2 or 3 years. And so I had a good work history with them, and their response in the beginning was, okay, you have MS, so what? You know, they really didn't treat me any differently. And then later when I asked for a job accommodation, it got a little bit more challenging, but I was able to work through it, and I hope that with this information, you're able to have a snappy comeback when somebody says something that's invasive at work. Remember that I'll forgive you for asking if you forgive me for not answering. And remember to focus on what your abilities are. Let your company know that you want to continue to work, you want to continue being positive and contributing, and you just need job accommodation to help you perform your job. I think we're going to turn it over now
Michelle, did you want to use any of the case scenarios?
I'm sorry?
Michelle, did you want to use any of the case scenarios that we put together?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to jump to the case scenarios now. I really like the first case scenario a lot, but I also, they're all just so good. So I'm going to start with the first and see if we can, how many more minutes do I have, Alicia?
Let's give it 5 more minutes.
Okay, 5 more minutes. We'll see how many we can get through in 5 minutes. The first case scenario is for Jill. She works as a law clerk, and she's had MS for 5 years. She's doing well, except she experiences some fatigue at work. And when she noticed that her fatigue was worse when she had to go back and forth to the file room, which included climbing ladders to get to what she needed, she spoke with the boss and asked for an accommodation to move her cubicle closer to the file room, and also allowing her to request assistance from a file clerk when her fatigue was particularly challenging. This is not an uncommon request at all. It's one I've actually worked with clients on before. However, Jill had a coworker who was another law clerk who noticed the accommodation and walked up to Jill and said, well, how do you rate? You have a file clerk running back and forth for you, and you're the closest one to the file room. I wish I could be treated special. Now, Jill has an opportunity here to decide what kind of snappy comeback would she like to use. And going back to my suggestion and also referring to Caitlin's who, what, why, when, and where, and how, I would, you know, in Jill's situation, ask myself, well, what is the purpose? What would be my purpose for telling her? Am I telling her so that she doesn't think I'm being treated special? Am I telling her because she perceives me, or am I telling her to educate her about MS? So first, get your, you know why you're telling her. With clients, what I caution them to do is if you're going to disclose little pieces at a time to see what kind of response you get from the individual. So what I mean by that is in this case, it wouldn't be necessary for Jill to say, I have MS, I've asked for an accommodation, and that's why I sit close here and give Betty all the details. She could start by saying something small and give her just a piece of information and say, well, I have fatigue, and that's why I have somebody helping me get the file. That's something small, and she can see how Betty responds to that. Does Betty act in a supportive way, or does she act in a non-supportive way? And then based on how Betty acts, Jill can decide later on down the road if she wants to share more with her. But most importantly, the decision is Jill to disclose, not Betty to play detective and get the answers out of her. If Jill was in a situation where she felt that Betty was supportive, she had interactions with Betty in the past about having fatigue, and Betty was supportive, although it doesn't sound like it was her question, but maybe she had a different tone of voice than how I read it, Jill might take the opportunity to educate Betty about a fatigue and MS and how fatigue is one of the leading issues on why people leave the workplace, because it's difficult to manage fatigue. And that by having an accommodation, Jill was really going to be able to contribute a lot in other ways, and it really wasn't vital to her performance of her job to be climbing up and down a ladder to get files. Alicia, do we have time for another one, or should we move on to the questions?
We need to move on to the homework.
Okay. So I'm going to turn it back over to Caitlin, who is going to review the homework action plan.
Well, first of all, I want to say thanks, Michelle. There are some other case scenarios included, folks, for you to read and think about on your own, or maybe have a discussion with a coworker or your partner or a friend. I have to say, folks, I had decided to quit my job as a university administrator and do some training to be a life coach, and I was set to be a life coach and Myers-Briggs and consulting, and I had big plans for running my own business. And I was diagnosed 4 days after I quit my job. So my journey, I guess I never had to disclose except to myself, who was the owner of my own business. So although I didn't have to make any of those decisions, I'm sure glad that we have resources and support from the National MS Society, from the career coaching program, planning-wise, that's offered. And I hope this information really helps everyone. I just finished teaching a class here in the Albuquerque area on chronic illness, and it's called MyCD, as in my chronic disease. And the one part of it that I found the most helpful, and I think our students did as well, was what we called the homework action plan. This plan is designed as a way to help hold ourselves accountable for goals we set. What is today, April 24th? How many of us are still being successful with our New Year's resolutions? Or did we have to then change them into St. Patrick's Day resolutions, Easter, Tax Day? So what instead of letting our resolutions go by the wayside, what we'd like to do is help you develop something called a homework action plan. Again, maybe getting to sound kind of old by now, but we're going to go back to the five H's and the W. So what I'd like you to think about is, what are you going to do, how much will you do, when, and how many days a week? So the examples as we come up with homework for snappy comebacks to the comment, "But you look so good," might be something like practicing some responses to "But you look so good," like, "Want to see my MRI?" or maybe a more professional, polite response. Or you might want to practice what you're going to say to the next person who says that to you at work. So take a minute and maybe think about something that you might like to set as an action plan to try in the next couple of weeks. The example that I might use would be, by the next time we talk, by the middle of May, let's say, I will swim, which is the what, at an aquaerobics class, 40 to 50 minutes, which is the how much, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, that's the when, at least 7, which is the how many times. Now, if you did the math, 3 times 3 is 9, so I should, if I were 100% compliant, I'd be there 9 times, but I want to give myself a break. In case I have a rough day, in case my kid oversleeps and we can't get out the house, or in case I just need a break. So you have to give yourself a little bit of slack sometimes when you make these goals. Michelle, do you have an example of something you might want to try as in a homework action plan?
Related to work or?
Yeah, do you have one related to work, just to give another example?
Well, okay. If let's say you're working and you notice that you are having some, you know, problems at work, fatigue, might the homework assignment be, I'm going to educate myself about the resources at the MS Society about work and fatigue? And so that would be the what. I have a complicated what. And, you know, how much? Well, what do you want to learn? I would narrow it down to one thing, like, what do you want to learn? I want to learn about energy management, or I want to learn about accommodation. So pick one topic.
So let's do one. the one topic could be the how much.
Yeah, the one topic could be the how much. And then when, you know, when are you going to research this? Are you going to do it one time a week, twice a week? And, you know, give yourself a break because it does, it is a lot of information. So you may want to do it like, you know, like Caitlin did Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for 30 minutes each day. And I'm not that good with math in my head, so I'm not even going to try to figure out how many times. So. But I do agree with Caitlin in terms of giving yourself a break for when you may have a bad day. But that's an example that comes to my head just right off the bat, Caitlin. Thank you for asking.
Thank you. Well, one of the reasons that I believe firmly that, especially for those of us living with a chronic illness, that includes that sneaky thing called fatigue as one of the main symptoms, is that we have to give ourselves a break. And I have to tell you, folks, a minister said to me once, don't should all over yourself. And we might find ourselves saying, oh, I really should go to aqua aerobics today. I really need some exercise. Or I should, you know, eat healthier. Or I should skip ice cream tonight. But that can be very detrimental to ourselves. And we really don't need that. So the next part of a homework action plan is, as you'll see on the next slide, is how confident are you that you can complete this plan? So if you're thinking about what you might be writing down right now for an action plan, and if some of you are in Albuquerque, you know I'm going to ask you what your action plans are next time I see you. But on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 being unconfident and 10 totally confident, rate yourself. How confident are you that you can complete this plan? Ideally, for this assignment, we'd like you to be confident at about a level 7. And one day in our class, one of the folks said, well, I'm really only confident at about a 5 that I can get this done. And the most lovely thing happened when another student turned and said, Joe, or Joelle, whatever, what can we do to help you, or what can we suggest to help you raise your confidence level to a 7. So even if you need to say 2 times a week instead of 3 times a week, and you can be more confident in making that plan happen, change your plan. So some of the action plan ideas that we would throw out to you might be around exercise. I hear rumors that some of us have maybe not 100% compliance with taking our medicines and taking the prescriptions that we have been given or that we choose to take. So that might be an action plan idea. I know myself, napping might be a good action plan. I am going to nap 4 times in the next 2 weeks. And I think the most important one, and maybe the one that you all logged on to this conference call for, is how about trying out some new responses to, but you look so good. And if you have any questions or want to follow up, I set up an email account so that you can send in questions about your action plans called nmssactionplans@gmail.com. And I promise to read them all, and if I can't respond, they're going to Michelle. And if neither of us know the answer, we'll send them on to Alicia. But the final thing that I really want to share with you this evening is I've been taking this wonderful MS aqua aerobics class, and it's lovely. We have one of those cool chairs at the pool that you sit in, and then it lets you into the water, and you sit in the chair, and you can get right back out, and we have 2 women in scooters and 3 people with walkers and a dad that comes because he needs to drive his daughter. And there's usually quite a few of us laughing in the locker room afterwards or working. And so I asked 2 of the folks in class the other day, I said, oh, I'm helping with this conference call. And what do you guys say when someone says to you, but you look so good? And both these women looked at me quizzically and said, what's our response? Thanks. So I'm going to leave you with that to think about as a possible answer when you may be tempted to give a snappy comeback. But instead, we can take a deep breath and just say, thanks. Alicia?
Claire, I think let's open it up for questions.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone now. Our first question will come.
Mm-hmm. And ladies and gentlemen, as a quick note, we really only have about 10 minutes to take questions, so please keep your questions as brief as possible. If you have any further questions, you're welcome to email folks, either me or the email address that Caitlin has set up, and we'll be happy to try and answer your questions via email. So, I'm sorry, Claire, go ahead with the question.
Okay. Our first question will come from Dawn. Please go ahead.
I just want some clarification. I had heard five H's and one W, but I wrote down what, how much, when, and how many times. So did I hear wrong?
Oh, man, did I say it wrong? That very well could happen. What did they tell us in English class? Is it five W's and one H?
There you go.
And I very well might have said it opposite. Forgive me, please.
I could have been the one that did it.
Okay. Oh, back to English class.
Our next question will come from Lisa. Please go ahead, Lisa.
Is it Lisa or Lisa Ray?
It would be you.
Hi, Lisa Ray.
Hi. Mostly it's about a comment, I guess, and that is, I mean, I was diagnosed in 2007, and I went out on disability a year ago now, and the frustration as a newcomer to MS is I didn't find a lot of resources or know who to go to for resources. And as a new MSer, it's very frustrating knowing who to go to talk to, even about a word like accommodations. I had no idea to even start asking those kinds of questions. And I turned to the doctor's suggestion of going to the National MS Society, and I lived in Denver and didn't get a lot of help there. And so I felt trapped, and I went out then knowing that my daughter did a lot of research for me, thank goodness for children that are willing to help, and started learning about accommodations and presented a request for accommodation to my employer. And after a month, it had no response. And in the meantime, I began looking for a job because I was terrified of being fired. So I guess my comment about all this is I think these kind of workshops are wonderful, but I wish I knew how to reach out and help be a liaison to those newcomers that are coming to MS every single day. Because as a newcomer, I didn't know who to talk to or where to ask questions or how to get information. Thank you.
Lisa Ray, did you know about the 800 number for the MS Society or call?
That's how I got the Denver MS.
Okay.
And I got very little assistance from them.
Okay.
It was very hard to get through to someone. They said they would have someone call me. They didn't. I would call back and research and ask. And I just felt like it was a dead end constantly trying to get information from them.
Well,
and when I would want to get someone.
I have a suggestion for you. I think that might be really beneficial. They just started for you to help others, because I think you're right, that was a frustrating process. And if you can help others, get there a little faster, I think that would be a wonderful thing for our community. There's a new online community that we started at the National MS Society, MS Connection. I think you guys have probably seen the advertisements for it. It has a neat line that connects two people that are sort of both dealing with an aspect of multiple sclerosis. And I've been on the website msconnection.org, and it's a great online community where there's a lot of discussions happening about different aspects of multiple sclerosis. And that might be a really great place for you to start getting involved in sort of the work arena sort of questions that are going on, so that you can, if you become part of that community, you might be able to answer a lot of the questions that people are posting. And I think it'd be really beneficial to people because you've obviously done your homework and your daughter's helped you with that. And so utilizing your experience with that in that community, I think would be a really great place for you to channel that energy.
And Lisa, and I know Lisa Ray is here in New Mexico, so she can call Caitlin for lunch in the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
And I really think Alicia has a great idea about volunteering or getting connected in msconnection.org, building those networks. They're so vital.
Okay. And our next question will come from Susanna. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have two concerns. One is I need some advice on where to get some help to apply for my disability. I have gone through the whole process of applying, and I was never accepted because the Social Security Administration says I never earned enough credits, and I never made a lot of money, but I've worked very hard, and I have a master's degree, and my problem is that I have all of this training in being a healthcare provider, and absolutely all of the job tasks that I have been trained to do, I can't really do anymore. I might be able to do them one day a week, one person a week. And so I'm just sort of in a quagmire because I need to know resources to re-educate myself and learn to do some other things. I ran my own healthcare clinic. I'm a licensed acupuncturist. I still hold my license and my national board certification, but I can't hold a needle anymore. I can't even write my own name on a piece of paper.
Suzanne, this is Lisa. I think that that's a great segue for Michelle to talk about the career coaching services again, because that might be something, this sounds like a situation that she might be able to assist with. Michelle, could you tell Suzanne about the career coaching program?
Sure, Suzanne. The career coaching program is part of PlanningWise, and it assists individuals who are evaluating or restructuring their career. That would be my part of it. And then also with assistance in understanding your health insurance, your disability benefits, or doing financial planning, we partner with some financial planners that volunteer to help with those two things. And so you could, if you're in the South Central region, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, or New Mexico, you are eligible for the PlanningWise program, and you can get more information by dialing 1-800-344-4867 and then pressing option 1. And I was looking to see if I have any resources for the Social Security. There are resources that you might want to look into, you know, like at the Department of Labor for resources regarding assistance on your disability, or there's also resources for attorneys that can assist you, and you can get some more information at askjan.org. And then you're going to look under legal resources. That's a great website, askjan.org. It has a search function. And then there's also a website, which is lawhelp, that's lawhelp.org. I've not used that website, so I can't comment on how helpful it is, but you may try either one of those for assistance with your disability application.
And Michelle, this is Alicia. I can also jump in and say, if you call the 800 number, that 800-344-4867 number, those ladies that answer the phone there, I believe there might be a gentleman or two, I apologize, also know a lot about the Social Security resources available and also about the Social Security system. So they can certainly answer questions. And Suzanne, I'm going to offer you my phone number as well. I believe I can probably talk to you about this process a little bit so to help you understand what the Social Security Administration is talking about with your credits. So my phone number is 713-394-2971. And if you received an email from me, which hopefully you did, then that has my phone number. So please give me a call or drop me an email, and I'll call you, and I can explain this process to you as well. So, Claire, it looks like we have time for just one more question, and then we have to round up here.
Okay. Our final question will come from Andrew. Please go ahead.
Yes. I was noticing that when I used the AskJan for issues on my employment, that the information actually is not that current when it comes to the attorney. A few of the attorneys that were listed actually do not practice anymore in the Albuquerque region, and or they actually don't even handle those type of issues. So is there any other location to find a attorney regarding a labor dispute and or ADA infractions by an employer other than the EEOC?
Hey, Andrew, this is Caitlin. I'm in Albuquerque, so if you want to track me down either on the web or via the NMSS Action Plan email address, I'd be glad to talk with you about some referrals here in Albuquerque and possibly through the IRC, which again is that 1-800-344-4867. That phone number should have a list of MS qualified or knowledgeable lawyers here in the Albuquerque area that may be able to help you.
I'll do that.
And I'd be glad to give you some referrals or let you know my experience applying for disability here in the Albuquerque area.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you so much, everyone. And I want to thank Michelle and Caitlin for all of your insight and your expertise. I think it was really beneficial to our folks. Thank you, everyone, for your great questions. If you have any additional questions, like I said, please feel free to email me or email the website that Caitlin listed, which was, Caitlin, help me out here. It was NMSS.
Action Plans, plural. So PLANS as in Sam, @gmail.com. And now, of course, my little MS brain is going to second-guess itself and hope I didn't put action plan. But I think it was action plan, plural. So NMSS, action plans, @gmail. And if it bounces back, just delete one of the F and try me again.
It's action plans. You got it right. Perfect.
Great. You can also Google my name and find me on Facebook. We can refer you to other MS discussion groups. I think Alicia had a great idea that we could also start this kind of conversation on the MS Connection part of the web. For those of you that are active and use the web resources, I know about a moms group on the web for moms with MS that discusses some of these same questions. So find us, and we'll be glad to see what we can do. Thanks for everybody's interest.
And again, if you want to learn about any resources that we mentioned today, that 800 number, 1-800-344-4867, is really the best number to start with, because that connects you to with a knowledgeable staff of people that can help answer a lot of questions. And then if they're not able to answer those questions, they work really, really hard to try to connect you to somebody who does know the answer to those questions. So I want to encourage you to call there. I also want to just give you a quick heads up that you will be getting an email from me, for those of you who have email addresses, with a survey to fill out about the call today, and also to give me some ideas of teleconferences you'd like to hear in the future. So please, please fill that out. I really appreciate your efforts in doing that, because that's really beneficial to us to make sure that we're providing you with the type of programs that you are interested in and that you enjoy. And again, watch our calendar and Facebook pages and newsletters for more information on future programs. I know I'm working on the next teleconference already that we're hoping to have in August. So do look for that information. We'd love to have you join us again. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And thank you again, Caitlin and Michelle. I appreciate your time tonight. And, everyone, I hope you have a wonderful evening. Good night.
Great.
Good night. Good luck, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Good luck.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your call. You may all disconnect at this time.